Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm on SFB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for call ID 17702 or SFU on call. And of course, we also call and broadcast over on twitch.tv. So go to twitch.tv/SFU on call. SFUONCALL. And you will find us there. You can participate in the chat room. I'll be happy to respond to any questions you have. And I always keep an eye out on the Twitch chat room. And of course, if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my account there is sfuoncall. I also have a personal account. If you want to, you can follow me there. And just a reminder that, of course, I'm very much happy to be a Catholic, an O's fan, and I love all kinds of techs. If any of those don't interest you, don't follow me. And, of course, I also have the Franz Games Twitter account for keeping an eye on what's happening with Franz Games. And, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. They've released the Federation Empire Tactical Operations. It's now available on the e-tailers, Warehouse 23, DriveThruRPG, and Wargame Vault. And, of course, also, it's available as a complete expansion that's hard copy, which includes the rulebook, three copies of the countersheet Tango and one copy of the countersheet Oscar. And you can either order from your local store, which if you can, please do. We need to support our local game stores because they, you know, need all the help they can. We want them to survive. We want them to stay around. We want a local game store to go to play games to for that camaraderie that you get from a local game store, and of course support the whole idea of also supporting local businesses. I'm always in for that. Any way you can support a local business, whether it's ordering takeout or placing an order through them so they can get it through the distributor in this case. And of course, if you're just want to get it as fast as possible, you can order directly from A to B. They do have it on their online store. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournament. In this case, tournaments. We saw the Masters tournament, which is still going on and off. It's slowly going through. And also, I think Aces is also going. I have not checked on the status of that, and I apologize for that. But also, we have, of course, Sapphire Star Tournament 9, is looking for signups. We are down to two open slots. There has been a mailing sent out, so if you received the mailing, then please, respond. Or if you didn't get the mailing and you do have an SFB Online membership, please email me, or at the very least also check your spam folder, because sometimes it gets stuck down in that dark and lonely place. Moving onward to the FedCom library progress, nothing to talk of at this moment in time. So with that is the news for this week. And it's me, I said, one and all, Paul, from welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, we got me, we got Gary. I know Dave's around, probably. There's some folks hanging out in the chat room on Twitch, and yes, I am correct. We got Mad Cow, which if I call correctly, that's Russ. Ooh, that sucks. He's sick with COVID for the second time. Well, dude, our thoughts and prayers are with you. Lord knows that would suck for me, especially if I lost my taste, you know, sense of taste, because that would be the worst in my mind. Okay. So I did mention him, so let's bring him on. Hey, Gary, how you doing?
Not too bad. How are things?
Things are going good. Things are going good. This week has been a relatively chill weekend. Chill week because it's just been me all my lonesome. Though of course, I still had to work and all that kind of thing. But my wife went on a little vacation and took our daughter with her. So they had a nice... Dave just reminded me that it's Dodgers 4, Braves 2, which is, I want it to be the opposite, but hey, it is what it is. Hey, Iggy. So, there was a particular topic that you wanted to
So what I'm hearing is that you'll have plenty of time to sit in peace and read the new rulebook for Federation and Empire Tactical Operations.
No, here's the problem. I am a very, very slow reader. And so imagine reading the book aloud. That's how fast I read. And the funny part about that, there's a little story, which is back in, let me think. I think it was my junior high days. I actually attended a class, it was considered therapy, in an effort to speed up my how fast I read. Basically, it was a forced reading where they had an actual projector which projected the words. And the idea was that they could crank up the speed a little bit at a time and I could read faster and faster, 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 faster. No, didn't work. Didn't stick. So. But anyhow. So I definitely won't be reading it, but it's definitely interesting because of... This is Federation. This is... Tactics operations. Basically, it's a tactics manual, correct? Gary?
No. Tactical operations. No. Oh, can you hear me?
Oh, yes, I can hear you. Yeah.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Okay. So, tactical operations is the latest expansion module for Federation and Empire. Now, the countersheets, Oscar and Tango, were released earlier this year. You can get them on as spare parts on the Starfleet store.
Right.
But eventually, in the not too distant future, they'll be like put together with the rule book and basically sold as a proper module, if that makes sense. And so, tactical operations includes a ton of new ships. Basically a bunch of ships that have been introduced in Starfleet battles that had never been gotten around to until now in Federation and Empire. And it also includes rules for new types of ships that didn't exist at the time in Federation and Empire, but now exist because they were made to exist in SFB. So like advanced technology maulers, for example. And it also includes a number of scenarios that many of them have basically been plucked from various issues of Captain's Log. And it even includes the first introduction to the wind cluster, because when the winds are in the process of being introduced both here and also in the upcoming F&E Civil Wars module. So what happens is most of the auxiliary ships for the winds are in tactical operations, as well as a scenario that allows you to invade the wind cluster. And then when Civil War comes out, that's going to include the fish ships, and it's going to include a scenario for the wind war of return.
Right. Right, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah, I totally. I don't usually follow the F&E product nearly as much, of course, than SFB and FedCom, just because I play SFB and FedCom a lot more than F&E because I guess I've never got into Epiphanies because it's more a strategic level versus, tactics level, which is just not my thing, I guess. But anyway, what were you gonna say?
Well, a couple of things. One is ordinarily an FNE module comes with a list, like, for example, with an SFB module, there's usually like a master starship chart, or what's the master ship chart, or there's a chart in the back of the book, the rule book, that basically lists all the various ships that are new to the game in the book,
right.
And also like what their year and service date and all that kind of stuff, whatever. Mm-hmm. But in this one, it does not include the SIT, the ship information table, for the ships that are in TACOPS, because what's happening instead is that ADB are basically, they have a series of master SITs that for the various empires that are on the BBS. And so what will happen is that in the not too distant future, they'll all be updated to incorporate the ships from tactical operations. So you'll basically have a single PDF that will be kind of like a master reference chart for every Federation ship or every Klingon ship or every ISC ship and so forth. And it'll tell you like which module it's in and what's your service date and all that kind of stuff, whatever it is, the command rating and so on. So you'll basically should keep an eye out for that. Now, there is a provisional TACOPS SIT that was posted during the development process. So I don't know if that's going to get tweaked a bit and so forth, like in the coming days or weeks or whatever. But so that's one thing that's a little bit different, because going forward, all of the SME modules are going to be like that. So they're no longer going to include the SIT data. That's going to be basically made available separately on the ADB website.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
And also...
But what about in the meantime? Yeah, because my understanding is what you're saying is that they're, at a later point in time, they're going to update the SITs on the website to include everything that's in TACOPS. But at the moment, there's no TACOPS chart in the actual rules at the moment, correct? A SIT that's part of the TACOPS.
You can use the pre-final one that they have posted on the PDF. It's mostly up to date. I don't know how much data needs to be put into it, but I guess it's enough to get you by. So.
Okay. So in other words, you might just have to, if you don't want to look at this, basically a pre-release set, you can just look at the counters. I'm assuming the counters have all the information that's necessary, and just the set is
some of.
Oh yeah, I forgot.
Like the SIT includes things like the
year in service
cost or conversion cost and so forth.
Yeah. Forgot about that part.
And also which ships you can convert from, because like for example with X ships, you can't convert. You can convert them from the equivalent peacetime construction hull, but you can't convert them from a wartime construction hull unless you build it to peacetime standards, which you wouldn't ordinarily do unless you're in the process of building the X-ship in the first place. So, like, for example, if you have... one of the standard technology ships that's being included is the Federation Heavy Command Cruiser. So that's on the counter sheet. You could, once the Master SIT is updated, you'd be able to do what Starfleet did historically with the prototype CX, is basically take a CB and, pay the X conversion cost, whatever, to do it. But on the other hand, if you have a Federation NCA, then you cannot convert that into a Federation NAX. You'd have to basically build an NAX from scratch.
Right.
Which is also a unit that I'm fairly sure it's in here as well. Sorry, I'm just checking because, that's right. The NAX is included on the counter sheet because in the rule book, it basically breaks down the various categories of ships that are newly included. So what also includes with is, because originally when heavy war destroyers were included Infinite Empire,
Mm-hmm.
they had like a generic counter, and there's a little kind of a blank square in the corner, so you could mark down which mission the variant
Oh,
has been
yes,
assigned.
yeah.
So, but now what they've done is TACOPS comes with specific counters for a variety of different missions, like for the HDWs. And there's basically in what's also happening is that, because I don't know, I think we might have mentioned this in podcast past, but there is a project going on called Warbook, which is about basically taking some of the older modules and bringing them up to 2021 standards.
Right, right.
And when the 2021 update to the Advanced Operations Rulebook is done, that is going to incorporate the most recent revisions to, specifically for the Federation, because the Feds are the most complicated, because other empires in the Alpha Occident, they can basically just build a fast patrol ship tender version of the HDW. So it'll
right.
basically include room for 6 PFs, mech links, and then also 2 special sensors. But because the Feds
don't have
in
PFs,
non-standard, yeah. in the standard timeline, they don't build PFs. So instead, they've got like 3 different types of heavy fighters, like the A-20, the F-111, and the F-101.
Mm-hmm.
So the Fed Empire basically has about 4 different designations that only the Federation use, specifically for different combinations of heavy fighters that SSB allows their heavy war destroyers to use.
Right. Fed had to go a different way. Annoying.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time,
but
at the same time, it's kind of nice, you know, that they came up with a different way, because Lord knows, I'm sure you've heard it before, which is the whole issue with cookie cutter. You know, there was a point in time where it seemed like A to B was just, you create like the heavy war destroyer, and then everyone had to have a heavy war destroyer, you know, and if someone had whatever, a new heavy cruiser, everyone had to have a new heavy cruiser, you know, and just stamp them out, bum 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 bum. Just happens. They have their special, they have their whatever equipment and so forth. And you never have this idea of different philosophies when it comes to what ships would be built by different empires, you know. So that was always the issue.
Well, you won't have to worry about that with the Freighty, because tactical operations also includes a counter for the Powerista.
Hmm. Cool. Definitely announced that for those of you who aren't listening to the podcast, I only listen to like the video on YouTube. As Gary does point out, which is the Federation Empire of Tactical Operations just got released this week. It's available on the various e-tailers, you know, the Warehouse 23, the Drive-Thru RPG, the War Game Vault, and of course also it's available through ADV's online store and of course your local game store. And as I mentioned there, and I'm gonna repeat it real quick, which is please, 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 if possible, get any physical product through your local game store. We want to support them in any way, shape, or form that we can. We want them to be around. We want the community that can gather around those game stores, you know. Just a reminder. So, onward.
Well, I should note that I think there's still a couple days worth to post some after-action reports on the BBS. So, if there's any irrational items that you see on there that you're not 100% sure about, then that might just give them a little bit of time over the next day or two to update the version that's going to go in the print version. So,
right. So,
don't be shy if you see something on there.
Well, at the same time, the great thing about the way A2B does the print version is that it's printed on demand. Now, obviously, you have the issue, which I'm sure is why they don't do this. They, in theory, they could correct it, you know, bump, 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 you know, a little bit at a time. But then you have the whole issue with versioning issue. It's like a software product at that point, where you need to know what actually, you know, what errata that needs to be put out there, so that people who have a certain version of the hard copy knows what they need to errata. So I'm sure that they don't actually fix the errata, you know, on the hard copy, you know, immediately. They might wait for a while. Even though they have their errata. So, yeah, but as Gary pointed out, you know, if you're getting the product, the e-product, then, oh, understood. Iggy just mentioned that no local game store carries ADB products. Actually, Iggy, have you actually checked with the owner if they can special order it from their distributor? I understand that sometimes they won't, because they won't buy a few copies of the game just in case someone actually might buy it. But they might be able to get it through that. Nine Complete Strategist? Wow. It's been a while since I bought anything from Complete Strategist, because the last Complete Strategist I visited is in King of Prussia. I'm not even sure if they still exist in King of Prussia. I'd have to take a look-see. But anywho, so you wanted to talk about the Shapeways miniatures, the ones from...
That's right. Well, actually, just one final thing on the Fed and Empire thing as well, is that one of the scenarios, as I say, the scenario for the wind cluster is pretty interesting, but not necessarily just for the wind themselves. And also, there's a scenario that basically shows what would have happened had the Gorns and Federation gone to war during the Middle Years. But those two scenarios, I find them interesting for a more long-range reason, because the Gorn scenario includes stand-ins, because there aren't any official counters, I should say, for many of the Middle Years Gorn ships, like the Gorn Heavy Cruiser or the pre-refit version of the CL or CC, or even the Gorn early dreadnought. And in this one, now, basically what happened, this similar thing happened years ago with the Four Powers War, because when the first version of Fighter Ops was done, it basically included a list of stand-in units to represent things like the Klingon C6 or the Laren Royal Flyer early dreadnought.
Right.
But then when the 2016 version was done, they were able to actually expand the number of counters on the reprinted counter sheet. And the new counter sheet does, in fact, have ships of the Four Powers War. So
they
were able
cool.
to basically formally include those ships for the first time.
Okay, so they actually have the actual middle year ships instead of, you know, saying, okay, this is approximately what it was. That's cool.
Yes. Now, with this time around, it's still only stand-ins, because there wasn't any room to put the unrefitted Gorn ships onto the TAC Ops counter sheets.
Right.
But now that the semi-official stand-ins, like the principle has basically been put into rules, what I would like to see is in the future, like say, for example, because we might have mentioned in the past that there's been previews for the Lost Empire, Paravians and Carnivons for Federal Empire in issues of Captain's Log. And so the Paravians basically include a range of middle year ships, and they have the provisional SIT for the Paravian, the preview Paravians, as well as P's in a row. They include those ships. So in principle, you could basically do up a mid-years campaign between the Paravians and the Gorns.
Mm-hmm.
And you could sub in the equivalent Gorn cruisers so that they'd be able to fight the Paravians at the appropriate power level. And in the long term, if a future F&E product after this one is able to find room for those Gorn mid-year ships, then it means that it would be easier for players to actually fight those campaigns when Paravian counters ever get done, so that you'd be able to basically make use of that map sheet P, the one that basically shows the what if the Paravians still had an empire, like in the off octant, and they would have been basically boarded up against both the IOC and the Corns. So that, I think, is an interesting future possibility that TACOPS opens up. And the second one that I think is interesting is that on the Carnivon side of Module C6, the Lost Empire's material, there's two different versions of...
So remember, so did they add the Carnivons into TACOPS?
Well, no. What I mean is that because there's a preview for the Carnivons in, I want to say, Captain's Log 51, and it uses basically one of the two alternate timeline options for the Carnivons. So there's one option where the Carnivons survive in their little corner of the Alpha Octant, and they basically they border the Wind Cluster. So in principle, a future update, like in Captain's Log or whatever, could include a variant of the new Wind Cluster scenario, allowing the Carnivons to attack, those Carnivons to attack the Wind Cluster. So that could be an option. But also, the Carnivons in Module C6 have an alternate timeline where they basically flee into the Wind Cluster and they become the Wind faction, but they still use Carnivon ships. And then later in the timeline, they burst out of the Wind Cluster and establish a brand new empire out of Klingon, Lyran, and Kazinti space. So now that we have at least the basics of what the Wind Cluster looks like in Federation and Empire terms, in theory, that could be used, you could pivot towards one day figuring out how to do those cluster Carnivons as a playable empire, like if and when the time comes to revisit the Carnivons in Fed member terms.
Right. Oh, that'd be cool. I like that idea. The whole idea of the Carnivons taking over the wind, taking over the cluster. Yeah. And basically, a way of protecting themselves and hiding out, you know, and then at some point reemerge.
Do you have, I think a while back, you might have gotten, there's like a PDF, there's like a free preview for the Module C6 rulebook. Do you still have that on your computer?
Let me take a look, see. Let's see if I can. There's the pre. That's weird. Yeah, I got the preview and the, okay. Oh, there it is. Okay. You mean the one that shows the F&E map?
Well, we can show both maps because if you open up that PDF, there's one page that shows the Peravian map, and then there's a later page that shows both Carnivon maps.
Right. Oh, that's an interesting one. Let me. Just so people can see the map that we're talking about here. Query there. So I'm looking at I'm laughing because it's the title of the page is Historical Maps. It's like, okay. Sorry, people. I got distracted by my cat, who's I'm concerned is going to do something stupid. Sokka. No one wants to play with my necklace. Okay. Anyway. The bottom shows the Empire of the Carnivon Cluster, and the top has the Carnivon Empire from Y120 to Y168. Is that considered part of the same timeline?
They're two separate timelines.
Okay, two separate timelines.
The one on the top is basically had the Carnivon survived as a traditional empire.
Okay.
And you can actually see on the top map, there are planets that don't exist anymore because they had Carnarvons living on them, and in the historical timeline, they were wiped out. So if you look at the bottom map, they're not there anymore either. So the main bulk of Carnarvons are in the Windtusk instead.
Oh, okay. Sorry, distracted by my cat again. I see. And then, and they don't even exist in the bottom, where the Carnarvon were in the wind cluster. That's interesting. Okay. Yep, okay. Just checking out the... That's...
And as I say, a few pages up, you can see the Paravian map sheet P, and that would give you a sense of how you'd be able to work out like a Middle Years campaign that had either Gorns versus Paravians or ISC versus Paravians.
Okay. That's weird. I'm not sure if this is a typo or not. But it says Paravian Farnest?
Oh, yeah, because that would have been their off-map zone had they survived as
well. Oh, okay. Farnest. It's just weird, the spelling. It's like it didn't really click until... if it was like two separate words, yeah, I can understand. But one word. It's like Farnest. It's like, what the heck is that? What's Farnest? No, it's Farnest.
So for the Carnarvons in CL51, there's an F&E style map for them. The Carnarvon Empire version, I should say, not the cluster one.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Carnarvon Empire version, I think their off map is called the Carnarvon Remote Ranges or something like that.
They came like thunder. Sorry, I'm looking.
But it is interesting how, on the one hand, if you look at the Paravian map, suddenly it makes that corner of the Alpha Octans much more dynamic where it wasn't before. But right. If you look at the Carnarvon ones, it's almost trickier because, like, the Carnarvons being there as an on-map empire makes the balance very difficult for the general war.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like, how are you going to basically swing that? I actually think it'd be interesting if you had a scenario where the Klingons and Carnarvons teamed up against the Kzintis and Nerans. But the Kzintis and Nerans weren't necessarily allied per se. They were more like they happened to be fighting the same enemy at the same time, but they still hated each other.
Right.
So that would be interesting
because, of course, in the traditional timeline, the Lirans are an ally to the Klingons, and the Klingons actually sell them like Klingon tug pods, I think the Liran get the UIM modules from the Klingons, correct?
I think they get both that and their facts from the Klingons.
Mm-hmm. Which would be interesting because the question is, would the Lirans start using some of the Carnarvon weapon technology if they were allies with the Carnarvons instead of the Klingons?
Well, the Lirans and Carnarvons would never ally because all the various cat and dog people, can't stand each other. But it would be interesting if the Lirans were forced to ally with the Hydrans instead, because there is a scenario in Captain's Log which kind of flips the alliances around, where it was the Kzintis rather than the Lirans who allied with the Klingons. So the Lirans were basically forced to ally with the Hydrans instead.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Whoa. The thing is, what I'm thinking about is, in the case of, the Carnarvons coming out of the cluster, and then they expand and actually have their own empire. And as you pointed out, it's a difficult thing for them to do. And I even think about it more. I'm going, you know, I can't, unless the Carnivans were extremely strong, you know, or the Klingons were hard pressed on other lines, you know, combat lines. I forget the term at the moment. Against the Hydrans and the Zinni, I can't imagine the Carnivans actually surviving overall. You know,
well, in the Carnivan timeline, the Carnivans kick things off in Y-178. So at that point, the Kazintis still haven't regained most of their territory, but the Klingons are basically fully engaged against the Federation. So,
right,
like the tide has already begun to turn against them, like in that sense. So, and the Lyrans, they're basically still trying to like keep tabs on things in occupied Hydran space, and also help out now and then on the Federation front. So, the Carnivans basically, they become kind of de facto alliance members, but it basically means that the Kazintis never come back. So, like on this map, I think if I recall correctly, the C6 version of events basically has it that any Kazintis who are still alive pretty much been absorbed by the Federation. So, you're basically in a de facto replacing the Kazintis with the Carnivans as a quote unquote alliance power.
Hmm.
That's why the wind cluster has the five-pointed star, because in Fen Empire terms, if it's a five-pointed star, it's an alliance capital. If it's a six-pointed star, it's a neutral capital, like the ISC capital. Or if it's an eight-pointed star, it is a coalition capital, like the Klingon or Lyran homeworlds.
Yeah, which is... okay. It's just that we see a larger area. Okay. That makes sense now. Okay. I was wondering, it's like, wait a minute, why are we seeing the Lyran capital? It's like on the bottom, but not the top. And then I realized that basically it's a shift in the map, that is. We're seeing more of the lower part of the map. Actually, seeing a larger map overall. So you actually can see where the Lyran capital is. While on the top map, you know, where... the Carnivan, you know, don't take over the wind cluster. The Lyran, you don't see the Lyran capital, just because it's a smaller map.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically, that's right. The map is like on the bottom half of that page is like two hexes deeper.
True. Exactly. That's but yeah, as I said, I think that alternate timeline where the Carnivan take over the wind cluster, and basically my assumption is that that basically they beat well, that's interesting. In that alternate timeline, when I'm assuming that the Zinni, what's it called?
The hegemony.
Yeah, there's a reason. The wind cluster was originally settled by a Zinni, not anarchist.
The usurper.
Usurper, thank you. I'm assuming that basically what happens in that case when it comes to the usurper is that the usurper is killed when he enters the wind cluster because the Carnivan are already there.
About a decade in that alternate timeline. Historically, the Carnivans were divided up into about 12 to 14 hordes. But the hordes, they could never really ally, like, maybe more than two or three of them at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So in the first timeline, the Carnivan Empire timeline, they are united, and they become, like, a standard empire. But in the Carnarvon cluster timeline, the two hordes that are closest to the wind cluster decide to flee into the. They basically take a bunch of their ships and logistics trains and, you know, fly. You know, basically quote unquote kill themselves by flying into the radiation shell. And historically, apparently something like that actually happened. Like when the usurper showed up historically, he actually found the wreckage of a couple of Carnarvon ships, but everyone was dead. But in this timeline, they made it through. So they were there basically about 15 or 20 years before, or 10 years or so before the usurper showed up. So when he showed up, and then when the Orions showed up, they pretty much got captured, and then their technology was kind of reverse engineered to kind of give the Carnarvons access, like, you know, an understanding of what modern technology should look like. Mm-hmm. So basically the Carnarvons had a much larger starting point in terms of population and technology and number of ships as well. So by the time they were going to burst out, they actually had a pretty substantial fleet that they could use to, you know, claim a new empire, like in on the open map.
Right. Yeah. I'm just thinking about the Carnarvons, their stupidity in staying separate, you know. It's like, oh, you know, instead of joining together to become a single great horde, you know, and be something more along the lines of the Lyran Empire, where you have the counts and so forth, but they consider themselves as a single empire, you know, even though there's different duchies, you know, different counties. Basically. Which is definitely a better way of going. So there never was an alpha, you know, alpha dog, you know, a king.
Damn. Well, I suppose like in the historical timeline, there's still hopefully the possibility that there might be some exiled Carnarvons in the Sargasso storm zone.
Right, right, and that's what I'm kind of hoping for, even if they're just a small horde, you know, because the Paravians in the Omega, they're not really that large, if I recall correctly. Am I remembering that correctly?
Well, that's how they start off, but then after the Andromedan and Soltar invasions are over, they actually become a major threat.
Okay. So, yeah, but in the Sargassian, which is, to say the very least, an interesting part of the galaxy, with those the seasonal storms, which separate everyone out, you know, into their own little pockets of, and of course, the Zircalians. Which the question, I think the more important question in that regard is, will ADB ever get around to doing it? You know.
Well, I suppose, things proceed with Module X2, then I guess the odds would be it's more favorable for the Zircalians, but when it comes to the Sargasso, I don't know. I mean, like, having the Carnarvons is nice, but you'd probably need a few other empires, like brand new ones, to, like, just to kind of, like, you know, build around and stuff. But although I suppose, like, you wouldn't necessarily have to do them all at once. I mean, you could probably just maybe place ones, that maybe three of them that are relatively close to where the Carnarvons will be,
right?
And start with them, and then basically introduce Sargasso from the Carnarvon perspective. And then, if it's a success, build it out. And if not, then never mind.
Right. And but the only question about the Zircalians is: do we have to have the second generation ships for the Alpha Octant before they can actually introduce the Zircalians?
Well, you'd have to ask ADB that, but supposedly there have been long-range Circalian incursions into the Alpha Octant for decades, but it's not until Y210 before the invasion happens. So in theory, they could maybe do like a prototype thing where you just get a few sample ships and then try them out. But I suspect that a formal module would have to wait until Module X.
Understood.
If you like, say for example, if they gave you like an Andromeda and Intruder and a Cobra, a couple of Cobras rather, and you basically play tested them as like a wandering monster, but then it's only later that they realize, oh, by the way, these guys are, here's their full fleet, you know.
Understood. I think that'd be great if they could have a playtest module for the Zerkalians, because I know I'd be interested in it. Course, with ADB, I know what I would like to do, but the question, would ADB actually be interested at all? Because I know that Ken Burnside was quite interested. And that was when they were working on LMC. Ken Burnside contacted me, and we actually worked on adding the rules and the weapons and so forth onto the online client. The reason being is that you could then play test the LMC ships, a collection of LMC ships actually in the client, and people could actually test it over the internet. So you didn't have wouldn't require doing everything local, which is in this day and age, when it comes to SFB, it's getting tight, it's getting hard.
Although when it comes to playtest stuff, I do wonder, have you talked to ADB about, because there's a number of playtest rules for Fed Commander for things like X-ships and gunboats and stuff. Would it be worth asking them if they'd allow any of the online players to help playtest those rules?
I can neither confirm nor deny that there's support in the product for said ships.
Okay.
Well, actually, I can say that there's support for the ships already in there. ADB already contacted me about them. That I can say, and I have some of the gunboats. We just can't release them, not until ADB allows us to release them.
So, speaking of Ken Burnside's work, Stargate Universe-wise, I mentioned before the recording started that another one of his empires has been added to the Shapeways storefront. So, I thought it'd be a good chance to take a look at them.
Definitely, definitely. Don't mind me. I'm going to go and see if I can. Shapeways project. That's always the way I get there, is I actually go to the discussion board because they have a link right there. As I have this weird thing. Yeah, Dave. The Braves are losing 6-2 to the Dodgers. I'm not happy. I try to keep the number of actual links to websites down to a minimum, if possible. Okay, da, 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 and I'll sort by newest. Okay, da, 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 da. Right, and which is those are weird. Sorry. I should share what I'm seeing with the rest of the world. And that is the Battle of Eye, destroyers and frigates and of course the light cruiser, and then the Carnivans. Ooh. Which that's
Carnivans. Yeah, you actually, can go.
Yes.
If you go over to the side, you can actually see there's a separate Empire by Empire listing.
Yes.
So you should see one specifically for the Badabai. And then also, for comparison's sake, there should be one from a few months ago for the Inin as well.
There it is, Inin. Right. This is the old Inin, yes. Wow. Oh, they're actually... Okay, there's a... Okay, yeah, there are two of them. Okay. For a moment there, I thought that was a really weird ship. Looking at the Inin corvettes. And for a moment there, I thought that the two corvettes that are right now, they're basically together, they're linked together, were actually one ship. And no, they're two ships that you have to separate. Which is weird, but hey, that is fine. Okay, let me show the ones that actually just got released. The Baduvai. Which, to me, the weird part about these ships is they kind of look like the upper portion look like basically fighters, you know.
Yeah, if you look at the cruisers, they look kind of like space shuttles.
Yep, looks like a modern
so actually,
shuttle.
If you want to drop in one, yeah. So if you want to like have a closer look, I'd probably suggest on one page bring up the Inin heavy cruiser, and then on another page bring up the Badabai strike cruiser.
Okay. Okay, there's the strike. So let's bring a new tab for that one versus the heavy cruiser. And what I can do is I can do this. So there we go. Yeah. Cool. I know people on the podcast, it's really, really exciting. But yeah, the strike cruiser looks basically like a fighter, while the heavy cruiser looks more like a modern space shuttle.
And I remember years ago, someone on the BBS referred to the Inin as Fat Lyrans.
That wouldn't surprise me, because definitely then overall, yeah, I've seen the SSD for the Inin, and now I even see the ships themselves, which are pretty bulky and not overall. I don't like the design of the ships, but you know, I'm not going to like all ships, you know? It's like they put...
Well, you know,
yeah, for the Inin, it just looked like they put a hex thing on the top and just attached some pods on the bottom, you know?
Well, The bit on the top is basically the carapace, but then the warp engines and the bridge and stuff are in the booms underneath. And I think there's rules where you can like detach the port boom, almost like the way you can like separate the boom on a Klingon ship or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So, for the Badabai, it's a bit different because their ships are kind of, I guess they can drop their warp missiles as normal, but the actual ship is just kind of like, it doesn't have its own like separate wall section.
Right. So you don't have like a boom slash oh geez, what do the Klingons call it? There's the boom section, and then there is I forget
The saucer on Federation ships.
No, I'm thinking about the Klingons. Because the hull
Oh, the
section.
Neo-Tholians.
What's that?
The Neo-Tholians with the command modules.
No, I'm thinking about the Klingons, because the Klingons, you have the boom section, and then you have the back section, but I forgot what that's called.
Oh, the secondary hull.
Secondary hull. So, yeah. Well, I guess that's one of the good things about the Anine then.
And you can also see on the Anine ship is that the neutron beam weapons have been mounted facing to the sides, because on the SSDs they have split firing arcs.
I'm looking at the heavy cruiser versus light cruiser. And the heavy cruiser, it's you got the big section, and then you have these two pods. Okay. And that's it. Versus the
Well, they're
destroyer.
two they're different design generations, because so the Inine, the ones that you see there, the smaller ships like the destroyer and light cruiser and the corvette, they're actually earlier ships that the Inine found that when they had to develop modern technology, that they could not upgrade the warp engines on their earlier ships. So they were more like what the Federation would call a National Guard ship. So even the Inine light cruiser still can't go faster than speed 24.
Oh, okay.
So the Inine heavy cruiser is a more modern design, built from the outset to be able to fight at speed 31. So the other modern Inine ships would look closer to the heavy cruiser than the light cruiser. So in a sense, the models are, the miniatures are good in terms of presenting that difference in design generation.
Let me look at the Strike Cruiser for a moment for the butt of eye. Da, da, da. I'm gonna look at the 3D model. That's interesting, because that's one of those things that you can easily. Those are the kind of ships, the butt of eye. I think those are ships that could easily be borrowed from another science fiction based combat system. I think that they could easily do that with little effort, which I'm sure A to B would be fine with. Hey, if you want to buy ships that I going to make a profit off of, buy them for whatever game you want to buy them for,
Well, if you're using them in the SFU, you can actually see that underneath the little triangly warp engines, they've got the dots to represent the charged particle accelerators. And if you underneath the prow, they've got the mass driver launchers there.
Oh, okay. I see it. Right now I'm looking at the proof frigate, which is interesting. Because
Yeah, so because with
Yeah, all I was going to say that was that it looks like it's almost like a cargo pod, which could easily be dropped from the ship. That's what it looks like. Whether I understand it, most probably it can't, but that's what it looks like.
well, I guess the nacelles, they're set because but you know how like Federation ships. They have certain sizes of nacelles that are common to a number of different types of ships. So, for example, the frigate has two six-box engines, and then the war destroyer and battle frigate have three, and then heavy war destroyer has four. And the old South Transfer stories, the same mentions of the Dreadnought and the Heavy Cruiser. So similarly with the Bat of Eye, there's certain basically building blocks that they use from certain engine sizes. So the Strike Cruiser, the central warp engine is the same as the two warp engines on the Heavy Cruiser. But then the left of the port and starboard engines on the Strike Cruiser are the same ones that you would see on like the war cruiser and war destroyer, like if slash when those appear.
Okay, gotta stop that. I was starting to read the text describing the Bat of Eye. It's like, no, this is not good. This is not good, good material. I'm gonna look at something.
How's that?
What's that?
What is it about them that you don't like?
No, it's nothing I don't like. It's just that having me sitting here, quiet as a mouse, staring at the screen doesn't make actually engaging material that people actually want to listen to.
Oh, okay.
You know, and as I said, I am a slow reader.
although it is good that the various species in the LMC, there's like a decent variety, and they all have something different. Like there's none of them that are just, they look like humans. So like,
right,
you thought like the Bat of Eye are kind of like four-legged creatures with no heads, and they've got these kind of weird like brain things on their backs, and then you've got the Inine are kind of like space lemurs, and then you've got the Magadine, and they're kind of, well, I guess there's insectoid species in other parts of the universe as well. But so it's like they all, you know, there's something a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I guess if you really want humans to show up there so badly enough, you could just wait until Operation Unity.
Yeah, well, I agree. That's always been, of course, one of the issues that people have had with, like, Star Trek and so forth, which is every single empire, every single... Well, sorry, let's go back. Let's use a proper term. This is actually... We're actually talking about race. It seemed like every race was humanoid. You know, the only ones that were not humanoid really are the Tholians. But the rest are humanoid. Well, why? Why are they all humanoids? In the case of Star Trek, you can actually imagine the reason why at least the original Star Trek empire, you know, races were humanoids, because that's all you could do. You were limited by the costumes and so forth of the people that were playing the parts. They had to be humanoid. Even Star Wars, if you look at Star Wars, all of the known races are humanoid, at least from I remember from the different movies and TV series that I've watched. Lord knows I've watched quite a few of those, because my dear sweet son, he loves his Star Wars. So I've watched quite a few of them with her. Ah, Chris just mentioned the species 8472 on Voyager wasn't humanoid, which I think is a good thing. A good way of separating it out from the original series. Anyhow,
well, actually, because they kind of lampshade that in the SFU as well, because if you read things like Prime Directive Federation and so forth, it talks about how there are so many planets where, you know, ancient humans or Andorians or whatever were like, you know, planted there 100,000 years ago, and that's just why they look, you know, like, you know, they look humanoid or whatever, and even in other parts of the universe, I mean, like there's like in the eastern part of the Alpha Octopus in particular, like most of the planets that the Gorns or Romulans would settle if they even had any previous inhabitants, they were kind of conveniently killed off in the past, so in ancient past. So there's not that much of a variety there.
Right.
So it's not until you start going into places like Omega or the LMC or whatever, and that's when you really start being a broader variety of creatures and stuff. But,
right. And
I mean, I suppose even in franchise terms, like, I mean, like Paramount probably find it easier to include non-humanoid creatures in, like, say, Lower Decks or the upcoming Prodigy show mm-hmm. than they could in live-action stuff like Discovery or Picard or Strange New Worlds. Although, you know, I mean, you know, special effects have moved on a long way, so maybe Strange New Worlds will have a bevy of non-quadruped, non-four-limbed beings that they'll encounter, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chris is mentioning that there's a TNG episode called The Chase that offers an explanation of why there are so many humanoid races in the galaxy. And, of course, in the SFU universe, its history, you know, they have the whole thing of, you know, the Klingons, the old kings, and the case of, like, the Gorns. You know, there are multiple Gorns, you know, kinds of Gorns, you know, blue, green, I think yellow. I forget the different colors. But they were all on different planets. And, you know, of course, there's the Lizard Kings. You know, the whole idea is that there was these...
Those the ancestors of the Paragon.
You know, yeah, these ancient races that were pre-existed, and then, you know, from that came these other races. Spirit Kings, I forget what the Spirit Kings were. But anyhow, I think with that, we'll wrap it up for this evening. I don't want to run too late. So, Gary, it's been wonderful having you around, because it's been a while.
Thank you so much.
And so you have
just one final question before we go is, are you going to watch Prodigy next week or not?
Probably not, no. Is that on Paramount Plus or... You know, it'd be Paramount Plus. Yeah, that's where it would be.
In the US, yes. In Canada, it'll be on Crave and CTV Sci-Fi Channel. Mm-hmm. So, just actually, what's interesting is that Canada is one of the few countries in the world where all of the current franchise series are actually broadcast on television, because the license holder, Bell, basically, they put it all on television on CTV Sci-Fi Channel, and then they have their own streaming service called Crave, which streams them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But they do actually make like Star Trek Discovery and the upcoming The One with Christopher Pike, Strange New Worlds. That one is going to be on those same channels as well.
Understood.
Just hope that the Strange New Worlds version of the Enterprise doesn't have that roller coaster turbo lift thing.
Yeah, I've not been really that interested in. I haven't even gotten through the first season for the Star Trek series on Star Trek. I forget what it's called, but you know, it's been on Paramount Plus for forever. And I have yet to get through the first season. You know, I know there's three Discovery. Thank you, Chris. Star Trek Discovery. I got through like the first three episodes, and that's where I left it. Haven't gone through the first full season, and my understanding is that I think the second season isn't so hot. The third was better, and now they have the fourth season, which is coming out too.
Well, I will say that for the second season is that the guy, the people who play like Christopher Pike. Well, I guess I'm spoiling it for you now, but basically. Anson Mount, you might have seen him in, he was in another show called The Inhumans for Marvel. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he basically plays Christopher Pike, and he's really good at Pike, actually. Uh-huh. So him and then Ethan Peck, who plays young Spock, and then Rebecca Romijn, she plays number one. Like, you remember Major Barrett's character from The Cage?
Right.
They basically were so popular that they're actually getting a brand new spin-off, and season one of that just filmed. and it's actually set called Strange New Worlds. It's set on the Enterprise, like 1701, no AB. Sorry. And it's going to be set like with Pike as in command. And that's going to be coming up in the not too distant future as well.
Huh. Interesting. What they do to the Star Trek franchise, it's just nuts. Well, that's what Disney is currently doing with the Star Wars franchise, doing all these different shows, you know, based on the Star Wars franchise. The Mandalorian, I've not watched any episodes of that at all. When it comes to Disney Plus, the only reason I still have it at all is just because of my kids like to watch it, especially my son. My son and my daughter both, they love watching the same shows again and again and again and again. Big surprise.
Well, it's actually funny because in Canada and in some other countries, because we don't have Hulu outside of the US, so instead they added a subsection to Disney Plus called Star that includes a number of Hulu projects. And it actually also includes seasons 1 or 2 of The Orville. So I'm hoping that when season 3 of The Orville comes on next March, that it'll be on Disney Plus here in Canada. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yes. Oh, geez. I've heard about The Orville. I have not watched any of those episodes either. Obviously, there's only so many hours in the day I have, and only so many hours in the night I have for watching TV, you know, because I got other things to get done. So, anyhow, let me get going. Gary, it's been wonderful, and you have a good night.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Okay, bye. So, interesting. Discussion about the F&E and, of course, the latest Shapeways miniatures and some of the Badawi, sorry. Yeah, I know I'm mutilating the pronunciation of the Empire, but it is what it is. Anyhow, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.